take the rejection. They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election. It's a good thing that Saddam was captured, hiding in a hole just like a rat would. Now they're saying that the war went on because their intelligence was wrong. Was the reason for war based on lies and corruption? Where are the weapons of mass destruction?
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to Mark Levine's Inside Scoop on Washington, where we bring you all the news from the nation's capital that the government does not want you to know. And that special music means that today is Tuesday, Election Tuesday, just 3 weeks away, in fact, from the most important Election Tuesday, November 2nd, the first Tuesday in November, when you will finally have a chance to change the direction of this nation. But my guest, as always, does not want to change the direction of this nation. In fact, he wants four more years. He thinks the last 4 years have been just paradise, terrific, wonderful times, best times in America. At least that's what I think he thinks, but he'll have a chance to speak for himself. It's my old friend Tom Robbins, the state chair of the Utah College Republicans. Utah is a state that's probably the reddest of the red states, got more support for Bush over Kerry than any state in the United States. In Utah, they've never even heard of a lot of Kerry's ideas, and that's why I like to bring Tom Robbins on the air to find out what indeed red state voters could possibly be thinking to support four more years of this president. So here he is, Tom Robbins. Welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hey, thanks for having me back on, Mark. I'm actually, you know, active as always. I'm excited because today we're actually organizing a big, huge carpool to go down to the debate in Arizona, support our president, provide the energy, and just have a great time just seeing how everything goes. It's going to be very exciting. We're really pumped.
You're taking a whole bunch of Utahns down to Arizona, huh, to try to are you going to the debate, or are you just trying to influence the spin?
Well, I think as far oh, Mark,
I just try to figure out what you're doing, you know, Tom.
We're going down there because, you know, an opportunity to see the president of the United States. They're having a big rally before the debate. We're going to be participating in that, and just young people who love to get involved, you know?
Well, that's
nothing
good.
Nothing sinister about it.
You know, I'm glad you're going to the rally. I assume all of you have signed your loyalty oaths, right?
Well, I haven't, you know, they haven't drawn blood yet, but we'll
okay,
see.
Okay, because you've got to sign those loyalty oaths. You know that to go to a Bush rally, you have to support him. Kerry's reaching out to the undecided. Bush only wants to speak to people who already agree with him. So I'm glad he's got you, Tom, and your whole crowd of Utahns going on to Arizona, because there may not be enough people down there to agree with him. So it's a good thing that you're going to join the mix. Let me ask you this, Tom. In the last debate, I thought a woman asked George Bush a very good question. It's one that he's avoided in the past. And she asked him, she said, "You made thousands of decisions as President of the United States. Can you name three mistakes that you've made?" And George Bush couldn't name any. The only thing he came close to is he said, "Well, there's some people I appointed that I wish I hadn't, and it's best that they go nameless. I could probably name them. They're probably Treasury Secretary Paul O'Neill, Terrorism Czar Richard Clark, General Eric Shinseki, all the people that basically told him the truth they didn't want to listen to." But let me ask you this. Do you personally believe, Tom Robbins, do you believe the president has made no mistakes in the last 4 years?
Oh, absolutely not. You know, him, like any other commander-in-chief who has gone before him, makes good decisions, makes tough decisions in hard times, but also makes decisions when, you know, it's always easy to be a Monday quarterback, if you will, but there's always things that you do wrong, and he's human. He's made mistakes.
Okay, so you and I agree that George Bush has made mistakes. Now, do you think George Bush believes he's made mistakes and was lying to this woman, or do you think that he really believes he hasn't made mistakes?
Well, I think it's just obviously politically, as far as we're getting so sensitive in the last 3 weeks, is that nobody wants to give the other side ammunition. Kerry doesn't want to admit some mistakes that he's made in the United States Senate as far as his record, and I don't think Bush is going to be out purposely publicizing and giving sound bites to the other side. So I think it's just a political reality that we're dealing with.
So you think George Bush knows he's made mistakes and just isn't willing to answer the woman's question honestly in the debate? Is that your view?
There's a view where basically in the political reality which we live in, either the Kerry camp or the Bush camp, D's or Republicans, really want to get out there and kind of highlight things which may not have gone well in the past. And that's a reality we live in, the two-party system.
But, you know, Paul, I mean, he could have said...
There's pros and cons, but definitely Bush has made some mistakes and Kerry's made some mistakes that they don't want to necessarily talk about.
Yeah, but there's some obvious stuff, right? I mean, the CIA, the Dofo report just came out and said that Saddam Hussein did not have any capability to do biological, chemical, or nuclear weapons. The worst that he had was the intent, the thought crime. He wanted to get those weapons. I mean, he could have said, you know, it was a mistake to believe he had these weapons. Or he could have listened to his own viceroy, Paul Bremer, the dictator that he put in charge of Iraq for more than a year, who said we didn't have enough troops in Iraq. I mean, there's so many. He could have said, you know, I was wrong to flip-flop on stem cell research or on gay marriage or on the deficit. Or I mean, there's so many things he could have said. Do you really think that he believes that he's made no mistakes, or he just doesn't want to admit it to the American people? Sounds like it's the latter. He just doesn't want to admit it.
It's a political reality. The Kerry campaign doesn't want to admit any flip-flops, and the Bush campaign doesn't either. That's just the system that we live in with our two parties. There are some strengths. There are some weaknesses within that system. We have to recognize that, you know, with the hype and the media and the scrutiny and the microscope that these two gentlemen are under, that they're just neither side is really willing to come out and say, hey, I want to highlight a mistake for you just in case you haven't seen it before.
Well, I guess I don't agree with you that neither side has done it. In fact, John Kerry admitted in the first debate that the way he talked about the $87 billion was a mistake. He should have made more clear why it is that he supported the version that was paid for and didn't support the version that wasn't paid for, things we've talked about in this program. He admitted the way he talked about it was a mistake. And I think, actually, I want a president to be reflective enough to admit when he makes mistakes. But, I mean, do you want that from your president, or you want a president that sort of goes gung-ho ahead and never reflects upon what he's done in the past?
Both sides can definitely do a better job speaking directly to the American people, being more clear and concise, and within that maybe pointing out some things that they've done in the past which they need to correct because they were not done properly. I think both sides could definitely benefit from that, and the American people are really yearning for that, but just on the two-party system that we have, that reality is just not going to manifest itself very readily.
Well, that's fine. I'm glad you agree with me that it is a good idea to have a presidential candidate that is reflective, someone who is willing to admit mistakes and maybe even change course when they're on the wrong path. Let me throw out the phone lines, give everyone a chance to call in and challenge you or me. As you know, sometimes we get conservatives call in and challenge me, and I welcome it. I really welcome any challenge. That's indeed why I invite a Republican every Tuesday on Election Tuesday. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP. Or if you just like numbers, it's 877-577-2667. Or you can do what so many of you already have done, and that is comment on the blog. Just go to www.radioinsidescoop.com and say whatever you like, and we'll be reading some of your comments on the air. And I want to start with some of those comments. We got a comment here from James, and he writes that he'd like our guys, UE guys, that would be you and me, Tom, to discuss the corporate welfare that just passed through Congress. James writes, I love how it's supposed to create jobs, but Bush himself said small businesses create jobs, so how does giving tax breaks to big corporations help create jobs? How does letting business bring back more profits from overseas help create jobs? And how did the Democrats in Congress let this go through? Well, let me take a crack at this, James, and then I'm going to turn it over to Tom. This huge pork bill, $140 billion, to me is just an example of the runaway, big-spending Republican Congress and Republican president we have. The Republicans, I fully admit, used to be the party of fiscal conservatives. But all you have to do is take a look at this bill, and you can see they are not fiscal conservatives. In addition to billions of dollars for oil and gas companies, and billions of dollars to tobacco farmers, they've got money for bow and arrow manufacturers, for people who make Chinese ceiling fans, for fish tackle boxes. There is absolutely no way to justify this in a capitalist country. The only way is that people are going in, getting their representatives. And I got to tell you, the Democrats fought this, and they fought this. But when push came to shove, it's close to an election, and a lot of members got their stuff in there. But I guarantee you this, under a Kerry president, you wouldn't see this kind of pork. That's my view, Tom. Give me yours on the recent bill just passed Congress.
Mark, well, I think your view is a little bit too high on cloud nine as far as reality is concerned. You have a situation where candidate John Kerry has promised anything and everything, just about any constituency he's in front of, which, depending on the different numbers you're going to run, you're looking at about $263 trillion of new proposed spending, including all the reforms in health care and providing coverage and all these multiple pork-type issues, where in the end, he says and looks directly in the camera, even after 20 years, a legacy in the Senate of raising taxes, looking at the camera and saying, I will not raise taxes on anyone making under $200,000.
Right.
If anyone is going to bring home the pork and not know how to pay for it, it'll be President Kerry if he's elected to the presidency of the United States.
You know, it's hard for me to understand how you're saying that, given that this candidate, John Kerry, broke with his party, broke with the Democrats, to support a balanced budget again and again and again. Let's deal with what you said. Support anything and everything? You've got to be kidding. Under any neutral source, don't believe me, don't believe Tom, the Bush spending agenda is way higher than the Kerry spending agenda. Well, whatever you think about the numbers, Kerry comes a lot closer than George Bush. George Bush, just his tax and destroy Social Security plan alone is $3 trillion. And I don't know, did you say $263 trillion? You didn't really say that, did you, Tom? That's what I wrote down. What did you say about numbers?
In front of me, but I will get that out and we will discuss that. I think it is... I'll have to dig it out, but it's over a trillion, I think it was.
Over a trillion, okay. Let's talk about what was just in the Washington Post on this. They said, that's right, Kerry's plan is about $1 trillion. Bush's plan, again, apart from defense, apart from Homeland Security, apart from education, just his tax plan and his plan to privatize Social Security is $3 trillion alone. And that excludes everything else. So if you're a fiscal conservative, if you're an old Perot supporter from 1992 or 1996, you got to be for John Kerry on this one. Let me cite to you as another source, the son of President Dwight Eisenhower. This is what he writes. His name is John Eisenhower. He's written a lot on the military, all kinds of other things. John Eisenhower writes, "Now more than ever, we voters have to make cool judgments, unencumbered by habits of the past. Experts tell us we tend to vote as our parents did or as we always have. We remain loyal to party labels. We cannot afford that luxury in the election of 2004. There are times when we must break with the past, and I believe this is one of them. As the son of Republican President Dwight David Eisenhower, it is automatically expected by many that I am a Republican. For 50 years through the election of 2000, I was. But the things that make him change his mind," I'm not going to read the whole article, though I really advocate that you folks find it. It's easily found on the internet. "The decision to invade Iraq unilaterally and the huge amount of spending, government spending by this Republican, has caused John Eisenhower to change his voter registration to independent, and he's going to vote for Senator John Kerry." What John Eisenhower says is that today's Republican Party is one with which I'm totally unfamiliar. He writes, "To me, the word Republican has always been synonymous with the word responsibility, which has meant limiting our governmental obligations to those we can afford in human and financial terms. Today's whopping budget deficit of some $440 billion does not meet that criterion." He goes on to say that responsibility used to be observed in foreign affairs. America used to be recognized as the leader of a community of nations that always acted as part of it, not as a maverick separate from the community and insulting toward it. He goes on to talk about George H.W. Bush's coalition in the Gulf War, and he goes on to cite his own father, President Eisenhower, in the Republican Convention, saying, quote, "If ever we put any other value above our liberty and above principle, we shall lose both." He goes on to say Republicans used to be concerned, deeply concerned, for the middle class and small business and for balancing the budget, and that it was not something that was just cutting taxes for the rich. And finally, he ends by saying, "Senator Kerry, in whom I'm willing to place my trust, has demonstrated that he is courageous, sober, competent, and concerned with fighting the dangers associated with the widening socioeconomic gap in this country, and I will vote for him enthusiastically. It's an amazing article. You also, of course, also have the endorsements of many more newspapers. I don't know of a single newspaper that endorsed Gore that is now endorsing Bush, but many that endorsed Bush are now endorsing Kerry. And finally, there's the endorsement of the Iconoclast, the small newspaper down in Crawford, Texas, who has weathered death threats, that editor, to say that he also, though he endorsed Bush in 2000, comes and endorsed John Kerry. So, you know, Tom, what is it that's causing everybody, all these Republicans, to change their mind and vote for Kerry?
Well, I don't know if it's the mass wave, which you would like to maybe infer is going on, because it's nothing like that. There might be a few selected people that have looked at the issues and, you know, decided to go with a different person this time. There are also different people that are coming our way. And, you know, if you want to read a good speech about maybe a party that hasn't stuck to its principles or its values, I'd suggest you read the speech of Senator Zell Miller when he endorsed President Bill Clinton, and then just recently in this last election at the Republican National Convention outlined the way that the Democratic Party has gone so far to the left, it's unrecognizable to people like him throughout the South who once identified with the Democratic Party.
Well, you can have Zell Miller and all that that racist Southern heritage. You can have it. I think, frankly, the Democrats gave up on those people years ago. The Democrats have very much been the party of civil rights ever since the 60s. You can have Zell Miller, Strom Thurmond, Jesse Helms, all of them. Let me go to the caller, though.
You guys can have KK Bird. We'll call it even.
Well, you know, the funny thing about Bird is that he's the only guy left from that pre-1960s switch. We all know before the 1960s, absolutely, the Republicans were the party of civil rights. They're the party of Abraham Lincoln. And the Democrats, admittedly, in the South, they were the party of segregation. That's why Thurmond and Helms and all of them were Democrats. There's only one person left in the entire United States Congress from those days, and that is indeed Senator Byrd of West Virginia. So I won't defend him, but he's the only one. The second longest Democrat serving in the Senate, of course, is Ted Kennedy, and he's clearly a civil rights liberal. So Byrd's the only one you can point to. Fair enough. I agree with you on him, but I don't think...
If you want to talk about an exodus as far as from the Democratic Party, you know, recently enough, which I think should take your most attention, is that Democrats have always dominated the age group from 18 to 30.
And they do now.
No, they don't, Mark.
Oh, the polls I've seen, Tom, 15 points for Kerry in 18 to 30 age group.
Well, I don't know what polls you're looking at, because according to the Washington Post ABC poll that was taken last week, it shows Kerry and Bush are running neck and neck, and within the last 2 months, Kerry has lost 28% from the 18 to 30 crowd.
Well, I think that's a real outlier as a poll then, because virtually every poll I've seen has shown Kerry between 10 and 15 points ahead in the 18-30 crowd. In fact, I've actually made on this broadcast a prediction that it's young people that will make the difference in this election and will make the difference for John Kerry.
Well, you just have to look to the Newsweek Generation Next poll. It's also, you know, confirmed by Washington Post and ABC. The numbers are there. And, you know, young people can make the difference. The problem is, Mark, and I brought this up on your show before, your side's just not organizing. I don't know if it's they don't care enough or they just don't know how to put it together. We have recruited, the College Republican National Committee has recruited over 45,000 new members to our ranks. We're at over 1,500 clubs nationwide, and we're ready and willing to make the difference for the president and for the Republican Party.
Well, I'll tell you who's making the difference, and that's new voter registrations, where Democrats have out-registered Republicans 3-1. I'm very proud of that, and I think that will make the difference in the election, because these are people that are not being included in the likely voter samples of polls, and I think that the new registrations will make the difference. But I want to get to one of my callers who's going to challenge you or me. I don't know which. We'll find out in 1 second. Caller, you're on the air with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins.
Yes, this is number 464 from Michigan.
Yes, number...
Gordon, how you doing, sir?
Number 464, huh? Okay.
It took my name away. They gave me a number instead.
Who, John Ashcroft? Who's doing this to you, 464?
I want to know, but if Bush gets appointed again...
Yes.
...under questionable circumstances, what makes Tom think there won't be civil war right here in America?
You know,
No.
Look, I'm sure it's Gordon, and that's fine. He's making it as a joke, but actually, I do think he raised a serious point, Tom. And that is, after the selection of 2000, when half this country believed that the president was unjustly appointed as president. Can you agree with me, Tom, it would be very, very bad for this nation for the Supreme Court to intervene again? And if they do, I do think they risk violence this time. I think people are angry enough that if, again, the Supreme Court installs George Bush when the American people vote for someone else, if that were to happen again, it would be probably the most severe crisis this country has faced since the Civil War. Do you agree with me, Tom?
Well, you have to look at a situation here, Mark, where at least we live in a society where we have the biggest transfer of power. I must say one of the saddest days of my young life was when Bill Clinton was elected president. I couldn't understand it. But
you know, look,
people don't resort to violence. We're not that
now, wait
mentality.
A minute.
Bad things happened. The election was stolen from Nixon.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't.
You need to go back to Chicago, Mark. It's been documented. I'm just always sad that you're not as passionate about that.
Well, no.
People are not going to resort to violence. I do not believe there will be civil
war. I think that people will go to the streets, and actually I may be one of them. I'll tell you this. First of all, the whole thing about 1960 is false. The easiest way to check that is all you do is you go to the electoral vote count of 1960, subtract Illinois' votes from Kennedy, give it to Nixon, and guess what? Kennedy still wins. So even if there was massive fraud in Illinois, it didn't swing the election.
There was also major, major problems in Texas as far as voter fraud.
You'd have to switch both Illinois and Texas in 1960, and I don't support fraud wherever it occurs. It's never been proven. But I'll tell you this, and I want you to support me on this, Tom, and Gordon, too. If there is election fraud in a way that swings the election, there should be at least life imprisonment. And I don't know that I'd be against the death penalty for anybody who commits fraud in the election and changes the president of the United States. Can you agree with me, Tom?
I agree that if somebody, now you've mentioned that you would like the death penalty before, I'm glad you softened up.
Well, no, I would support the death penalty, but I'll take the life imprisonment as a compromise.
But if somebody is meticulously and purposefully, fraudulently defrauding people within the presidential election, which swings it, there needs to be a serious investigation, and that person needs to do hard time.
Hard time. Life imprisonment, Tom?
Let's give him life imprisonment.
All right, good.
Life in front of a firing squad.
That'd be okay with me, Gordon. I'd have no problem with that. And, you know, we'd apply it retroactively to Catherine Harris, except for the Constitution prohibits a retroactive application of criminal law, and I do obey the Constitution. But, no, to take your point seriously, number four, whatever you are. 454, thank you. I actually do think it's very serious, and I'm very concerned about electronic balloting. I hope that Kerry wins in both Florida and Ohio, because then it won't be just one state that makes a difference. But if it's Florida or Ohio, and I've said all along that if Kerry wins Florida or Ohio, I think he's won the election. If he loses both, I think he's lost the election. If it comes down to one state again, and if there's allegations of fraud again, you know, God help us all. That's why we've got to have paper records, and that's why I can never understand why the National Republican Party and state Republican parties, too, are against a paper record to prevent fraud. And people aren't watching this issue now, but if one state makes a difference, as it did in 2000, I'm afraid that people will watch the issue, and hopefully they'll call a spade and recognize one party was for preventing fraud, the other party was for permitting fraud. Tom, yep. Any last comments before I go to commercial?
Well, I think what we need to do here is realize that this election is going to be under a microscope. You haven't seen lawyers mobilize like this since I don't know when. And there's going to be election poll watchers in all the key states. There's going to be a variety, an army of people willing to respond to any questions. State elections people are better trained than they ever have before. They're very sensitive to the issues and to be able to do it. So I think you're going to see a completely different circumstance as far as fraud and different things that are going to come out in the election.
Well, Tom, I hope you're right. I myself am registered as a lawyer for the Kerry campaign. If they need me, I'll go to Florida or Ohio and write whatever briefs I can. I hope people are watching. And remember, there's a huge difference. Look, you said, Tom, you weren't happy when Bill Clinton was elected in 92. I wasn't happy when George H.W. Bush was elected in 1988. But I never challenged the legitimacy of that election. It was clear that he won. The voters had spoken. He won fair and square. And there's a big difference between winning an election rightfully and using your friends on the court to install you. And if we have to do that again, I really do fear for the direction of this country. Hey, number 454, whoever you are, thank you very much for your call.
The rule of law protects us all.
Okay, thanks again for your call. We're going to go to commercial break. I know I've got some of you holding on. Please keep holding. We'll be right back with more of the Inside Scoop right after this.
The Democrats won
take the rejection. They counted the votes in a web of deception. The GOP stole the election.
Took your car in for a routine checkup, and the repair shop said it had found a mysterious and costly problem deep in the engine that, quote, needs fixing, even though you can't detect any problem at all. Welcome to the shady world of today's Social Security mechanics, including politicos of both parties and a phalanx of banking lobbyists. They're telling us in the direst terms that there's a major problem deep in the Social Security system that must be fixed right away. The fix is going to be costly, they solemnly inform us. It'll require raising people's retirement age to as high as 70, cutting the monthly payments for all retired workers, and even privatizing part or all of this public safety net for retirees. But we must accept these fixes, they warn, or the whole system will sputter and die. BS alert, BS alert. Of all government programs, including the bloated, fraud-ridden Pentagon, Social Security is least in need of fixing. It's the most efficient program we have, requiring a mere 1% of its total budget for administrative costs. And even the political mechanics who want to mess with the program admit that Social Security is perfectly sound and capable of paying full benefits to future retirees through at least 2042. What insurance company or bank can make that claim? And with only minor adjustment, the system is solid through 2075, long after most of today's fixers will be dead. There is one fix, however, that would guarantee the soundness of Social Security in perpetuity. Raise the current $88,000 income cap so that the salaries, bonuses, stock gains, and other wealth of the elites are also subject to Social Security taxes, rather than keeping the burden solely on the wages of low-income and middle-class working folks. This is Jim Hightower saying, to push for this simple and fair reform, call Campaign for America's Future, 202-955-5665.
38%.
46%.
42%.
I cut my payments in half.
How much can you cut your monthly student loan payments by refinancing with College Loan Corporation? To find out, just call 1-800-2-COLLEGE. You'll quickly be connected to an expert loan consultant who will answer your questions and tell you how you can cut your monthly payment by up to 50% by refinancing your federal student loans at rates as low as 2.63%. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back, guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Like a rat would. Now they're saying that the war went on because their intelligence was wrong. Was the reason for war based on lies and corruption? Where are the weapons of mass destruction?
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. This Election Tuesday, 3 weeks before the real Election Tuesday, just 3 weeks before we'll know whether we'll have a new president or four more years of the same. My guest is Tom Robbins. He's the Republican state chair of the Utah College Republicans. He is now traveling, talking via his cell phone that I hope doesn't give out, traveling, leaving Utah, going to Arizona with a huge busload, I guess, of local college Republicans trying to go there and attend some of the Butch rallies. If you want to call in, you're welcome to do so. The toll-free number is 877-57-SCOOP, 877-57-SCOOP, or if you can just add to the blog at www.radioinsidescoop.com. And Tom, on the blog, we've got challenges to you and challenges to me. I guess I'll start with a challenge to you, and then I'll take one on my own. This is from James. James writes, so is he, meaning you, Tom, just going to dodge the question of the bill and attack Kerry? It's a fair question. James wants to know, did you support the pork bill that was just passed by Congress, or are you against it?
Personally, myself speaking, I would like to see Congress on both sides of the aisle exercise more restraint as far as getting themselves under control as spending in special projects and pork barreling. It's a problem on both sides of the aisle, and definitely it's something that needs to be cut out. The American people, that's what they want to see. The problem is on election day is that the voters care about the projects that are coming to their districts, the roads that are being built, the bridges that are being built, the special funding for their universities. So it's hard to kind of dilute those things, but, you know, maybe one day when you and I are both serving in Congress, Mark, we'll work together to cut that forth. But it's something that has to be on both sides.
Fair enough, but
to come together.
I should note that this is a bill, this particular bill, that's been fought by the Democrats. In fact, I did a whole show on this bill months ago. You can take a look at my broadcast archive blog. It's called Corporate Kickbacks, and I did an entire show on this bill. I remember talking at length about bow and arrow manufacturers and fish tackle manufacturers. This president clearly has done absolutely nothing to prevent runaway spending. In fact, he's pretty much encouraged it. If you're a fiscal conservative, we know this president is not a fiscal conservative. And as I said, John Kerry broke with his party to support a balanced budget. I don't see how he couldn't be better.
You keep on saying that, Mark, but actions speak louder than words.
Right, I agree.
A balanced budget, but when it comes to the push and shove of it, John Kerry is the man who's voted numerous times to raise our taxes.
But that promotes a balanced budget.
Pork into the government.
No, not for pork. I defy you to show me a Kerry bill for pork. No, I admit it. Yes, he did want to. He supported the Clinton tax cuts, which led us to the largest economic expansion of all times and led us to a balanced budget. You can't argue out of both sides of your mouth, Tom. You can't say John Kerry supported tax increases and was against a balanced budget, because when you raise taxes, that tends to balance the budget. Nice try, but you can't have it both ways.
What happens is, though, is that if you raise taxes on people, as we all know, you're actually, in the end, going to get less revenue because people have less to invest, and it hurts businesses, hurts the ability to produce growth and to grow new jobs.
Well, that was the Wall Street Journal's argument.
Of a tax cut to be able to do that.
That was the Wall Street Journal's argument in 1993, that actually if we increase taxes on the rich, it will destroy the economy and will lead to less taxes. And instead we had the greatest surplus in American history and the greatest economic expansion in American history. So we've heard that theory before. It's always been proved wrong. Let me go to the callers. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins.
Hey guys, how you doing today?
Good. This must be Brian from New Jersey.
You always get my voice.
Well, you have a distinctive voice. What's your comment or question?
The point of today's show is, why do these red states like Bush? And I still have yet to hear a good answer from your guest, so that's just what I'm looking for.
Okay, Tom, why is it that in Utah, Bush is ahead by 20-something points? Why are you so firmly in this president's corner? You really want four more years of the same?
A lot has to do with the particulars of Utah and out the West, people that really enjoy the God and family.
I mean, at the end of the day, it's religion, isn't it?
With John Kerry, he talks a lot of talk, but he's anti-life. He supports abortion on demand.
Okay.
He's unwilling to curtail that, and that's a big issue in the West.
So it's abortion. It's abortion. It's fundamentalist Christian conservative. That's where Bush is getting most of his support. I actually agree with you. I think Bush is getting.
I mean, there's a big chunk of people who just feel more comfortable with a president who's
a born again Christian.
And culture's a culture of life. And John Kerry is not in that camp. I mean, you're just going to either you're for abortion or you're against abortion. Those who produce and want life are going to be for President George W.
Or Bush. In John Kerry's case,
Bush was pro life. Would he be bombing innocent people in Iraq over a war that was not justified, is my question.
Well, the answer to that question, Mark, very simply, is the madman Saddam Hussein, as we know, used chemical weapons on the Kurds.
But he had no chemical weapons.
Graves.
No weapons.
15 years ago. Should we invade Germany now because of what the Nazis did 50 years ago?
See, I don't understand. The problem with your party is that you stay here for freedom and for liberty and for women's rights.
Right.
But
China.
The people, the women in Afghanistan,
right,
and the women in Iraq, especially Afghanistan, under the horrific, the absolutely intolerable
I supported the war in Afghanistan. But I think Brian's question is, what about the women in China and Yemen and Pakistan and Saudi Arabia and Sudan, where they're suffering genocide right now, in Liberia, in Haiti? I can name country after country after country where the situation is worse than the people in Iraq, and George Bush hasn't invaded.
Mark,
well, unfortunately, the people of your party are against war no matter what.
Oh, that's not true. That's not true.
People on the left,
you can say that's true, but it's not true. Every Democrat in Congress, save one, supported the war in Afghanistan. Every single one. How can you say our party's against war? when it's necessary.
Over 80% of Afghani women are now, or Afghanistan in general, is now back under Taliban control.
If that is completely untrue.
That's not untrue.
That
we only own one city
untrue.
Right now.
Tom, we only control Kabul. We control the capital. But outlying areas are going back to Osama bin Laden, back to the Taliban.
It is a fact that there has been, you know, women can go to school now, that there are schools that are opening up.
Some.
When they were shrouded and couldn't even go out of fear that they would be executed or beheaded in the public manner, that does not exist anymore.
Tom, when you get a chance,
when
you get a chance, I want you to go back to a program I had. I had Seema Wali as a guest, a terrific program a few months back. You can check it in my broadcast archive. Just search for Afghanistan. This is an Afghani woman herself. She has no particular partisan ties. She's not, you know, here to support Kerry or Bush. She's concerned about the situation of Afghani women. In fact, she was on the Loya Jirga. She's one of two women appointed by Bush to be on the Afghan government, and she is drastically concerned about the Taliban, about women's rights, about the Afghanistan going back to the ways it was. And she came on my program, and really, all you have to do is listen to that archive. She gave an impassioned speech. We need more American troops, more American money, more focus on Afghanistan, and I couldn't agree with her more.
If more American troops and more American money, you know, we're providing a lot of troops and a lot of money, and we'll continue to support that. The problem with the Democrats, historically, especially, you know, in John Kerry's votes throughout the 1980s, he chose to cut again and again and propose cuts to the defense. If we would have made all,
you're reading off
John
your talking points,
made,
Tom.
No
but
no way we would have been able to go into Afghanistan to be able to rescue those.
You're
people.
Reading off your talking points, but Kerry was actually more hawkish on defense than
I'm
Dick Cheney.
Car, Mark. I'm not reading off talking
well,
points.
You're reading off the things that they keep saying on TV, but we all know that Kerry was more hawkish than Dick Cheney.
Let's talk about facts here, okay? Yesterday, Sean Hannity came to Utah to counter Michael Moore, and Sean Hannity took.
Somehow I wouldn't think he'd need to counter Michael Moore in Utah, but go ahead.
Sean Hannity took questions from the audience, and from the audience was a Marine who had served in Iraq from the Foxtrot Company, okay? And he took issue with John Kerry saying that the first thing that the Marines secured in Iraq was the oil ministry. Because that Marine said, I know that is a lie, because when I was there, the first thing that we secured was the waste management plant.
That's his
talk
company.
About lies and
oh, come on. That's
States
his company.
Military. John Kerry's doing whatever he takes to get re-elected.
That's ridiculous. That's his company. The point is, we did secure the oil ministries, and we didn't secure the, you know, the looting, the banks, the nuclear sites, the, you know, where the remains of where we thought there were chemical materials, or even you know, the museum where national treasures got looted. We went for the oil ministry first. So let me go back to Brian though, because I go ahead.
The biggest point is that there was no reason to invade Iraq. We had ample amounts of people in Afghanistan. We were doing a great job. And then under the guise, if you want to go back to 2001 and look at the media, weapons of mass destruction, he has weapons. And then when we finally go in there and Rumsfeld says, oh, well, they're in the area around Tikrit, they're in the area around Baghdad, and we didn't find them, the story starts to change. There are 24 different reasons now that we went into Iraq where the main reason was these weapons that they have been declared not found. So the facts are is that we have 100-something thousand troops in Iraq, and we have 20-something thousand in Afghanistan, where Afghanistan is the real war, and Iraq is not. So we are killing innocent people, and he's not pro-life.
Tom, do you support the fact that we have between 5 and 7, up to 10 times as many troops in Iraq as we do in Afghanistan?
We need to fulfill our commitments, and having democracy in Iraq will provide, in the future, a culture which will breed about freedom. The only way that you
But Tom, that's a lot of rhetoric.
The only way that you can defeat terrorism is to have free people.
Tom, do you think Iraq is more important to American security than Afghanistan? Yes or no, or the same?
They're both equally important.
Equally important. If they're equally important, why don't we have the same amount of troops in them both, given that Afghanistan is a larger country? Shouldn't we have at least the same amount of troops in both?
There's different situations as far as security, uh-huh, and what is exactly needed to be able to protect, to be able to defend, and to be able to make sure that we don't slip back. And that's being balanced out. The bottom line, though, is that John Kerry was on the wrong side of the Cold War. He wanted to cut.
What do you mean the wrong side of the Cold War?
Like he wanted to.
Oh, come on.
Not going to Afghanistan.
Don't even pretend that that's true.
Cuba if we wanted to.
That's ridiculous. John Kerry was obviously on the right side of the Cold War, and remember, he supported.
He was not on the right side of the Cold War.
Of course he was.
Again, he criticized President Ronald Reagan.
He supported the Cold War. What he was against was a few weapon systems that Dick Cheney was against more when he was Secretary of Defense. I mean, you can't deny that whatever Kerry you're going to attack, Dick Cheney is worse. So I don't know why you're not dropping Dick Cheney from the ticket, because everyone recognized after the Cold War we didn't need some of these expensive weapon systems, particularly something called missile defense. Brian, I got to give you a quick last word, and then I got another caller that's been hanging on.
All right, just real quick. I also want to know why we're funding police and firemen in Iraq to be built up. But yet we're cutting funding in America. So,
great question. Thanks for your call, Brian. Tom, why are we not funding police and firemen in America like we're funding them in Iraq?
We have tripled the amount of money that we're spending on Homeland Security.
Yeah, but Bush threatened to veto a bill.
It's a new war. They're going to increase and continue to provide funding and training here in America.
Yeah, but
also, you know, Democrats kind of have
triple to what number?
They always scream out of one side of your mouth that we're not providing the infrastructure and the people of Iraq are sick of it because we're not getting the hospitals up fast enough. We're not providing the safety and the police and the firemen. But then if we do provide that, then you yell at the other side, well,
no.
Why aren't we doing this at home?
No, we shouldn't have been there at all is the easy answer. When you say triple the funding, let's get clear what we're talking about. Triple to $30 billion, far less than what the Democrats wanted, and there's $200 billion being spent in Iraq. Let me go to another caller. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins.
Hi, this is Mike. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm good. Mike, where are you from?
I'm actually from Utah.
Oh, okay. So are you a supporter of George Bush?
I've already voted for him absentee.
You've already voted for him absentee. Tell me, what was the major reason why you voted for George Bush?
It goes back to what Tom was talking about. I just feel more comfortable with his social views. But I did want to bring up one issue with your last caller, Brian.
Okay.
He referred to Afghanistan as the real war.
Yep.
And I do admit that we need to pay attention to what's happening to Afghanistan. And committing troops to Iraq has diluted our efforts in Afghanistan.
Okay.
Even though I think we still have a heavy interest there and are being successful there.
Okay.
How can we tell our allies under a new president, John Kerry, who you want, to send troops in support to the diversion war?
Well, let me explain exactly how we can tell them, all right? There's two ways to get our allies involved, all right? There's the Bush way, which is insult them at every opportunity, even when we're ahead of the game, right? Even when back in April 03, when Saddam Hussein's been captured, when George Bush is on the ship and declaring major combat operations over, and our allies want to get involved. You've got to remember what happened then. The French asked to be involved in reconstruction. The Germans did. The Russians did. India was going to send in peacekeepers, and we said no. No, we don't want you here. In fact, Bush even stayed across the border. He talked about threatening France and about degrading them from the G8, and he didn't even want to stay in the French city of Evian during the G8 convention. He insulted our allies. Let me just finish my point, and then I'll let you both respond. Let me read you what India Today wrote in September, because it's precisely on this point. Till a few weeks ago, India Today wrote in September of 03, till a few weeks ago, India would have been comfortable with even a U.S.-led command under a U.N. umbrella in the fashion of Kosovo or even Afghanistan. Okay? But the killings in Iraq, the steady deteriorating situation, has scared the Indians off. If the Bush administration 18 months ago had encouraged allies to come in, I think they would have come in. Now, to answer your question, Mike, and then I'll give both you and Tom as much time as you want. When we tell our allies it's a mistake, there are two options here. There's the George Bush option, to pretend that we've never made a mistake, that everything in Iraq is going swimmingly, to tell people, in effect, lies. People have their eyes open. Everything's just fine in Iraq. It's hunky-dory. Come in and help. In that case, I don't think any allies are going to come and help. Then look at John Kerry's more humble approach, saying, look, we made mistakes. It was my predecessor, George W. Bush. We know it's a mess. We know it's hard. Now we want you all to be a part of it. You can help us get out of this mess. We know that in the end of the day, you're an ally. You're on America's side. Okay. Our allies already know it's a mistake. So we can either lie to them, in which case, are they really going to join us? Or we can tell them the truth. I think even you, Mike, and I'm going to give both you and Tom a chance to respond. I think even you, Mike, would agree that between Bush and Kerry has a much better shot of getting our allies involved than George Bush. You disagree, Mike?
Well, I guess I don't know George Bush personally. I've never met him, though. I saw
Me neither.
Him one time, right?
Me neither.
I don't know John Kerry personally.
I have met Kerry, but I can't say I know him real well.
So I can, but I did work on a congressional staff one summer, right? A couple of summers ago, as part of my college experience.
Okay.
And I ate in the cafeteria that anybody can eat in that cafeteria.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
they were
where
serving,
I worked.
They were serving freedom fries.
I remember.
Freedom French toast.
I remember.
To blame that culture on just George Bush, I think.
It was actually the House Republicans who decided to serve freedom fries. I thought that was kind of stupid myself.
Well, the point is we were all eating them, and so we're all responsible. And so to blame it all on Bush and be like, he's mismanaged the war and he's the moron, I think what we have to look at is the fact that we were attacked.
All not by Iraq.
And pointed to the fact that he had weapons and wanted to use them.
Of no.
Course, now we know that the weapons weren't there, and I'm okay with admitting that.
But it's not true that all the evidence said that he had them. There was contradictory evidence. Bush only cited the evidence, the suggestions that he had them. He took snippets and things that he thought showed it, but there was plenty of evidence. The State Department said he didn't have it. The National
Kerry
Intelligence Estimate.
I'll just believe him.
In 1998.
Why should we give him a free pass?
In 1998, before Clinton did the last bombings of Iraq, all right? Kerry has always said that we need to have inspections, we need to have sanctions, we need to see whether he has the weapons, and if he does, you know, we need to take him out. But instead, and that's why he authorized the war, but Bush took that authorization and ran with it, you know, threw out the inspectors, didn't give them a chance to succeed. There's a big difference between saying, if he's got the weapons, we have to do something about it, and saying, oh, we're going to do something about it whether he has the weapons or not. Now Iran and North Korea are developing nuclear weapons, and we're doing absolutely nothing about it. And those are far greater threats to the United States than Iraq ever was.
Other than the fact that we had been to war with Iraq before in the last, you know, 10 years or so.
And that makes the difference somehow?
Yeah, I think it does make the difference. You know, we signed treaties with them, and they broke their agreements with the U.N. They played hit and miss with the U.N. inspectors.
Actually, they didn't.
They were misleading us. I'd say, what the heck, man? Let's go cut off Saddam's head. I don't mind.
Well, maybe back in 98, maybe back in 91, but it turns out that the sanctions worked. It turns out that they did destroy all their weapons.
What, Mark, you know? His sons were still raping.
And yes,
still
basically
yes. Basically cutting off the fingers.
And there's genocide in Sudan. What do you recommend?
Still terrorizing.
Yes, yes.
They're still doing horrific things. How long are you going to wait?
Well, tell me, how long are you going to wait in Sudan?
Found there. John Kerry thought that they were there. We have taken out a dictator.
Tom, thousands of people are dying every single day in Sudan. You heard it in the debates. John Kerry is willing to go in even without
North Korea with our military, Mark.
I didn't say
that. As a little bait and switch, as a little bait.
I didn't say that.
In front of people. You don't want us to invade North Korea because it won't work.
I didn't say that at all. I've never said that. In terms of me personally, I have said on this broadcast that, first of all, I think we're overstretched in Iraq, so I don't think it's hard. We don't have the resources now. But I advocated 2 years ago going in with heavy negotiations with North Korea, and if they refuse to accept our ultimatum, I would bomb the Yongbyon nuclear plant. I have said that on this broadcast again and again and again. Call me a hawk if you will, but I understand that North Korea is a threat, and I think we should be doing something about it. And John Kerry has said in Sudan he's willing to go to war even without the United Nations to protect against genocide. Why isn't Bush doing anything against genocide? Don't you think that's a severe thing that Bush should be doing something about?
I'll tell you what John Kerry has said. He has said that we need to always get a permission slip.
He did not say that.
Committee,
no, come on.
And we need to come together as a coalition.
Now, this come on, you're just telling lies about Kerry. Kerry said in the debate, you heard him. He said he is going to defend the United States of America. He even is willing to do preemptive strikes if necessary. He wants it to be the world to understand that we acted reasonably. That's his fantastic global test that Bush keeps talking about. He wants the world to understand that we acted reasonably. We should have a reason before we go to war. Bush says we don't have to have a reason.
To end the multi-nation talk, which involved China. Which
no, he didn't say that either.
That.
I heard the debates, Tom.
The unilateral talks with us and North Korea.
Tom, he said you can do both. You can do both. Why can't you have the direct talks and the multilateral talks?
It'll dissolve that just like it did before. He wants to be able to trump our coalition that we have to turn the backs on the Chinese and the Japanese and the others that are helping us.
The Chinese and the Japanese want us to talk directly with the North Koreans. They have said so. That's what they want. It's Bush that's been insisting that there be some sort of multilateral forum. They want us to talk directly with the North Koreans. The Chinese have made that explicitly clear. So, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. Mike, I'll give you one last word, and then I got another caller on the line.
Oh, I want to want to say is it's been good to eat freedom fries with you guys. You guys have a good night.
Well, call in again, Mike, anytime, not just on Election Tuesdays. I do welcome my conservative callers to call in.
Bye.
All right, thanks for your call. Let me go to another caller. Caller, you're on the line with Mark Levine and Tom Robbins.
Yes, it's Dave in California. And Tom, I think you are defending through a great deal of deception a president who has done very, very little for the average citizen of this country. He's done a great deal for billionaires. This was all planned out with PNAC. They had a plan to invade Iraq for profits for Halliburton, for the oil industry. This is a very ignoble war. And I can't help but think that at some point in your own conscience, you must fear what you're about to try to do to this country if you can get that man reelected.
Let me take that part that Dave mentions about domestic issues, because we spent a lot of time on Iraq, Tom. I want to talk about domestic issues. Clearly, and I know you're going to disagree with me, but can you really deny that this is a president who's all about helping the rich, helping the big corporations at the expense of the middle class? The middle class has a higher tax burden under George Bush than it ever had under Bill Clinton. Why is it that why should Americans elect, unless you're a multi-billionaire, why should a middle-class American elect George W. Bush?
George W. Bush, the culture which he has provided is for pro-small business. Ownership, home ownership is up. The ability to people to take the American dream and to be able to live it. He's willing to give more people back their money to be able to spend it how they see fit. And in that culture, people will survive because they'll be able to grasp freedom
but
and
wait
realize
a minute.
Their dream.
More than half the tax cut went to the top 1% of the American population. I mean, the middle class, you have to understand, Tom, the middle class is struggling here.
At least you're telling half the truth.
The middle class is struggling here, all right? Real wages are lower than they've ever been. People are working harder to make a living. Less people have health care. More Americans in poverty. The middle class American is losing their grip. It's harder to get an education. You know this, Tom. Education costs are skyrocketing. Bush is opposed to extending Pell Grants to the extent that John Kerry is. He doesn't want to fund No Child Left Behind to the extent that John Kerry does. If you're an average middle class American, I understand if you're a multi-billionaire, you're doing better under George Bush. I concede that. But if you're under John Kerry, if you make under 200 grand a year, you're going to get a tax cut. If you make under 200 grand, why wouldn't you support John Kerry?
I'll tell you what, Mark. I'll make this promise on this show right now.
All right.
Little John Kerry's comment to the camera that if you somehow are making less than $200,000, that he will not raise your taxes in any way, shape, or form in the next 4 years if he's elected president, that's got read my lips, no new taxes written all over it.
That's right, and he will not break that promise. All right, Tom, I'm going to make you a bet right here on the air.
Idealist than I am.
Tom, right here on the air.
George Bush made a mistake when he said, read my lips, no new taxes.
Hey, Tom, I'm going to put my money in my mouth behind John Kerry. I don't know how much you want to bet, $100, $500. John Kerry will not raise taxes. He will not raise income taxes. He will not raise Social Security taxes. He will not raise Medicare taxes of anybody under 200 grand. How much you want to bet, Tom? Well, 4 years from now, you can come back on this radio show, and one of us is going to pay the other. All right?
This is what's going to happen. You're going to buy me dinner in Washington, D.C.
Okay.
At
any restaurant of your choosing.
Okay.
You can pick the most expensive in the country.
We'll take it to the Capitol Grill restaurant.
That's fine. Or you're going to buy me dinner. All right?
Okay.
4 years from now.
4 years from now, we'll talk about Kerry's. And we won't even have to talk about it because he won't be elected, in which case...
I think he will be elected. Dave, go ahead.
You know, to me, the PNAC plan from the get-go was to a plan to shift wealth from the poor and the middle class, the lower middle class, into the pockets of these very wealthy and very greedy special interests. And he's done everything that he can to be consistent with that very purpose. It is not a noble government by any stretch of the imagination. It is defended only by twisting and deceit. I get the feeling Kerry and Edwards don't have a hint of how much of a corrupt administration they are really up against.
Well, one thing we know is this is the most secretive administration ever in American history, at least in post-war American history, far more secretive than, say, the Nixon administration. So it'll be very interesting if Kerry is elected when they uncover and see what this president had to hide.
An awful lot of harm to undo, because it's been break the middle class, take away the power to negotiate, destroy the unions, bring in foreign labor, outsource as many jobs as possible, make the middle class powerless, and then let the eagle soar and rule the world. That's a bad, bad plan. He's back in there.
I hear you, Dave. Thanks very much for your call. I appreciate it.
Before we're done, I just wanted to get your comment on just one thing.
Okay.
Because I know sometimes when you see things happening that are bad in your party, you'll actually admit it and say that they're wrong.
All right.
Michael Moore is a multimillionaire. We know this.
Right.
From his books, he's made profit off of his movies and everything.
Right.
Agree with it if you're not.
No, he is.
He is currently on a speaking tour of college universities, one of which he's coming to Utah Valley State College.
Okay.
Michael Moore is going to receive an excess of $40,000.
Wow.
From student fees.
Okay.
From the speaking to be able to speak at Utah Valley State College. We broke that down. It's somewhere in the neighborhood of about $260, $265 a minute.
Do other
now,
speakers
Michael
get the same
come
fee?
To the college and talk about how corporations exploit
right.
the middle class or the working class.
Tom, do other speakers get the same fee
what
or not?
What about Michael Moore exploiting students to the tune of $40,000? Isn't that just unconscionable?
That would be
doesn't that seem like he's retreated from his core values?
If Michael Moore is the only one that's being paid that amount at Utah Valley State, then absolutely it's unconscionable, it's hypocritical. Are other speakers paid the same?
What do you think about Sean Hannity saying that he'll come for free, debate Michael Moore, and then donate the $40,000 to charity? Don't you think Michael Moore is kind of a wuss when he retreats and says he doesn't want to do that?
I think he should be willing to debate Sean Hannity. And I'll tell you this, I'll be willing to debate Sean Hannity anytime. You tell him to come on my show, I'd love him to bring it on, and I will do it for free without anything. But, you know, I agree with you. I agree with you. He should get no more than other speakers get. And I respect anyone that's willing to debate for free. Absolutely.
And I just think it's sad when you have people who run their mouths, who make millions of doing it, and then when it comes to it, just don't debate.
I agree with you.
That's
I agree with you.
To happen.
We can agree on that. I got to tell you, I got so many comments on the blog, and I know a lot of people really want their comments read, and there are a lot of very powerful comments. So let me read some of them to you. We've got a comment from Fred who talks about the fact of about whether it's true or not that trial lawyers are pushing up the cost of health insurance. Last time he checked, it's because companies aren't making as much in investments. I should say that's exactly right, Fred. In fact, it's less than 1% of the increase in healthcare premiums, which are going up more than 10%, that can in any way be related to lawsuits. We've got James talking about small business and how important it is that people understand that it's about profit, that even if you make $500,000 a year, if you spend $400,000 and you only make a profit of $100,000, Kerry's not going to increase your taxes. You're absolutely right, James. That is the case. You have to make over $200,000 for Kerry to increase your taxes. And frankly, if Bush hadn't put us in this huge debt, paying all this corporate welfare for pork, he wouldn't have to increase taxes that much. We've got Nathan, who challenges me. Nathan writes, Mark, I don't think you're correct about Bush making you sign an oath before you can go to a rally. I know many people who've gone to see Bush who have said that's absolutely false. Not saying it never happened, but you talk like it always happens. Nathan, you're right. I don't know that it's every case. I do know that there have been loyalty oaths in several cases, most recently in New Mexico. But I'll tell you this, Nathan, whether you sign a loyalty oath or not, if you go to a Bush rally with a Kerry button or a Kerry t-shirt, you will be kicked out. That's not just one rally, that's every rally. A political scientist professor went to 15 Bush rallies with a Kerry t-shirt and 15 Kerry rallies with a Bush t-shirt. He was kicked out of every single Bush rally he went to, whereas the Kerry supporters welcomed him in, argued with him, and tried to convince him that he should support their candidate. We've got Vince, who points out that Kerry against life. What about his testifying before Congress after Vietnam? That's a great example, Vince. Kerry was trying to protect the future of the people that are fighting in Vietnam. And what about stem cell research? Did we lose? I think we lost Tom. All right. Well, I'll just continue on my own then. What about stem cell research? Yes, that's another example, I think, of Kerry sticking up for life, sticking up for saving people's lives instead of, you know, the frozen embryos used in vitro research. Vince points out that listening to Kerry testifying at age 27 tells him a lot about the man and his care and compassion for human life. Is this Tom again or somebody else?
Yeah, this is Tom.
Okay,
Mark.
Tom, you got cut off here.
Traveling to Phoenix for the president, you know, so sometimes.
I understand. It's on the cell phone. Let me ask you this, and you only really got a minute to answer. It seems to me that despite all our rhetoric back and forth, that I've learned something from you and from Mike from Utah. Tell me if you think I'm wrong. Mike from Utah was, to me, very interesting because he basically agreed that there were lots of things done wrong in Iraq. There were no weapons of mass destruction. I know he's supporting George Bush, but what struck me as interesting is that he and you, if you ask for the first primary reason why you're supporting George W. Bush, it's got nothing to do with Iraq. It's got nothing to do with terrorism. It's got nothing to do with Afghanistan, taking out Saddam Hussein, any of it. It's for you folks. It's for abortion. It's because you don't believe a woman should ever have an abortion, and I don't know, maybe even support the death penalty if she does. Okay, well, I don't know if you consider it murder or not. If you do, it seems to me that's the logical thing. But I'll tell you this. Did you happen to know, Tom, that in 1978, when George W. Bush first ran for Congress, he was pro-choice? Did you know that?
Well, I did not know that. I respect people.
He flip-flopped. He flip-flopped, and now he's pro-life. But actually, I don't know why that makes you think less of him, that he flip-flopped on the issue. But I thought that'd be interesting for you to know. I don't think a lot of people know that. He changed his – I actually have no problem with his changing his mind. But can you imagine if Kerry did something like that? He'd be excoriated. But I do think it's interesting.
Well, I think there's a difference when you change your mind in the heat of the battle, just when the opinion polls. When you say –
There's no evidence Kerry did that.
Don't vote for me if you don't think Saddam Hussein should be eliminated from power. And then on flip-flopping, say the wrong war at the wrong time. There's a difference between in 1978 – the first time you run for office, then politically maturing the pinnacle of reelecting yourself to be president of the United States.
I'll tell you this. There's, we're talking about Kerry flip-flopping. I guess the reason I'm sensitive to this issue is because I feel the same way. I also wanted Saddam Hussein removed from power. I supported sanctions. I supported the inspections going in. I even supported, unlike some Democrats, including my former boss, Barney Frank, rightly or wrongly, I supported authorization for war because I felt that only with that kind of threat could we get the inspectors in to do their job. Therefore, I had the exact same policy with John Kerry, and I also think it was the wrong war, the wrong place, and the wrong time, and I haven't changed my views at all. I've been consistent in saying Saddam Hussein was a threat, but not the most major threat America faced, and that sometimes when we face lots of threats, we should put them in priority. But, Tom, that's it. This hour goes very fast when you're on the air with me. Thank you very much for coming on the show, and I look forward to having you again another Election Tuesday.
Well, I look forward to going down to Phoenix. I'll let you know how that goes, and we're excited. In 3 weeks, President will be reelected, and then I'm getting a free dinner at the Capitol Grill in D.C., a fine restaurant, great steak.
Well, no, you only get the dinner if Kerry is elected and breaks his promise.
No, he's not going to get the opportunity to even break his promise. Well, we'll see what happens.
We'll see. Thank you very much for calling to the Inside Scoop, Tom. That's it for Election Tuesday. I know it goes very fast. I'll tell you, this is a show that could probably extend for 2 hours. Again, I think it's important. What did we learn? We learned that people in red states, right, they're mostly supporting Bush, not out of Iraq. They're jumping through logical hoops trying to justify why we're in Iraq and we're not in Sudan and we're not enough in Afghanistan. They're having a really hard time justifying that. That's understandable. It's practically impossible to justify. They support George Bush because they're fundamentalist Christian conservatives and because they're against abortion at all costs. That's what it is, right? That's the thing that makes the Republicans support their guy. And I understand that. I actually respect that. I just wish they'd come clean and admit it more often, that it's all about social policy. Maybe they hate gay marriage. Maybe they just love guns. And really has very little to do with the issues that everyone's discussing on the air. Listen, tomorrow we've got a great show. We're going to talk about the pharmaceutical companies and how they're controlling members of Congress. You probably know some of it to be true, but we're going to talk about it in detail with an expert from Public Citizen. Tune in tomorrow, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 Central, 1 Mountain, and noon Pacific. This is Mark Levine signing off.